From Variety, celebrating more than 115 years covering the business of entertainment, this is the Awards Circuit Podcast.
The big thing I needed to do for this was acknowledge Spirit and create a space where I could invite it in. And for me, I wanted to be really intentional about the specific spirits that I wanted to be present. It was, of course, Jonathan's spirit, but it was also the spirit of my gay Latino ancestors who were erased from our history and who were replaced by white supremacy. And now I'm sitting here 37 years old trying to think of another gay Puerto Rican man that I could look up to that's an elder, and it doesn't exist, even in narrative form.
Latino actor and star Robin De Jesus found a way to channel the proper inspirations to inform his performance in the new film, Tick, Tick, Boom. I'm Clayton Davis. On this episode of the Variety Award Circuit Podcast, we talk to Robin De Jesus about his experience working opposite Andrew Garfield in the film that chronicles playwright Jonathan Larson and how he created the landmark musical, Rent. But first, our Award Circuit panel discusses Spencer, Being the Ricardos, and the sheer number of screening events taking place around Los Angeles. It's all on this edition of the Variety Award Circuit Podcast. Stay close.
Hey everyone, it's Michael Schneider, also known as Body Mike, here along with Clayton Davis.
Oh, they're not going to have the context beforehand. That's going to be so great, though. Yep. Yeah. How you doing, Body Mike?
I'm good. I just gave myself a new nickname. So, Jazz Tank, hey?
Hello, Clip-On Mike, Body Mike, whatever we're calling you.
And the one and only Janelle Riley.
I actually gave you that nickname, I would like to say. I want full credit for that.
Yes, yes, you have the trademark. So again, people actually can't see us because this is a podcast, this is audio, but the three of you are repping your Spencer sweatshirts.
Spencer!
I am not.
They're so comfortable,
they're
by the
so
way. They're so warm.
Yes. It's quality. And thank you to the people who sent this, who recognize that not all journalists might be size small.
Or medium.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. Yes.
Thank you very much. It
Jazz,
was so wait, nice.
Wait, hold on, Jazz.
Talking
Jazz,
about.
No,
Jazz.
I just want to say it was so nice to get something that you don't drown in.
Yeah.
I mean, look, whatever. They did such a great job, and they are cozy sweatshirts.
Really cozy. In fact, I'm getting a little warm.
Well, yeah. Well, so,
but
some of us.
What's more important than my comfort is to make Michael feel awkward.
Yeah, yeah. All I say is this: Luke and Laura are my Spencer. Hashtag
oh.
Luke and Laura are my Spencer.
Aging yourself.
I don't know who this other Spencer is that you guys
well,
are
gifts
talking about, but
are my Spencers.
Exactly.
I spend a lot of time at the mall.
Or Spencer for hire, Robert Urich.
It's spelled differently.
Yes, that's true, with an S. But nonetheless, tis the season, and I know all three of you have been busy working your asses off, moderating panels, getting out there, seeing the world, seeing people. So I want to first go around the room and hear about the highlights for the week, because all three of you have had some amazing experiences over the past week or so, moderating some really cool stuff. So Clayton, let's start with you, because I know I've seen a lot of selfies of you and... beautiful people.
Yeah. It was AFI week. So that was what really took up a good majority of the time. But along with that came a lot of moderations for AMPIS and SAG that included The Lost Daughter with Maggie Gyllenhaal, Dakota Johnson, Paul Mescal, and Peter Sarsgaard. I got to give a good shout out about Normal People to Paul, who just... really good as a person.
He's a sweetheart.
Moderated a Jockey with Clifton Collins Jr. at AFI. Also the documentary Who We Are, which is my favorite doc of the year. Moderated Swan Song with Mahershala Ali, which Janelle did as well at a separate one.
He made me cry.
He almost made me cry at mine too. He has that Mahershala is a jerk.
I actually said that I was so proud of myself for getting through the Q&A without crying. And then on the last question, which was sort of a throwaway question, he just gave the most beautiful response. And I was like, oh, damn it.
What was the question?
Well, it's, I don't want to spoil anything in the film, but I guess we can, okay. I guess we can talk about.
It has something to do with the ending, I'm sure. Yeah. Cause that's what I ended on. And then it like got really emotional.
I mean, I think it's out there now what the film is about. So I think it's probably okay, but he plays dual roles because he's a man who realizes he only has weeks to live. And so he develops and spends time with a clone of himself to sort of take over for him afterwards. And he just talked about, see, now I'm going to get choked up talking about it. Just sort of making the most of your moment. And then I was telling Clayton earlier, the funniest thing was afterwards he said to me, he's like, you know, I really appreciate you. Seem like you're very present, you know, when we're talking. It seems like you're really listening. And I go, do you know who you are? I was like, it is impossible to not listen to you. Everything that comes out of your mouth is poetry. And yeah, just two beautiful performances from him in that movie.
Yeah. So it was just a bunch of moderations and then that, and then stupid Mahershala just making us feel sad. But no, he's so great. And
so
like
good.
The movie had such a good week, and we'll get to AFI in a second, but Jazz, you moderated a ton too. We shared Dune together.
Dune. Belfast on Sunday. It was like, you know, I think Janelle sent me a text a couple of weeks ago, or she posted about it, of like, now our first world problem is getting from venue to venue. Yep. When one is in Burbank and it's like, oh, the other one's in Hollywood, am I gonna make enough, you know, have enough time to get from A to B? But yeah, I moderated Dune on Sunday with Denis Villeneuve and his makeup artist Donald Moat, who is just, I just want to hug him all the time. He is like so fantastic. And it was the first time those two, Denis and Donald, had sat down together alone, and just their chemistry. They've worked together four times, and everything they talked about. I mean, what's so great about the Dune Q&As, I don't know if you've seen this too, Clayton, is like how packed those.
I was just going to say, yeah.
All craft, you know, all guild Q&As are pretty much full, given it's like 4 weeks into release.
Yeah, I did one last week too, and I tweeted something about how, you know, they're still packing them in. We had a sold out audience, and some person on Twitter replied like, well, that's what tends to happen when the director shows up. And I'm like, no, you don't know how empty these can be. Even with like a big film that hasn't been around for a while, or like, you know, even with a director who's a pretty big name, like it is a huge testament to that movie that they are still packing them in.
Yeah. And then I did Belfast with Kenneth Branagh and his crafts. And poor Ken, I mean, he had everything that day. It was, you know, deadline contenders, and he actually.
I'm sorry, what was that? What was that?
Sorry, you can delete that out. And then he actually took a tour around the Academy Museum, and he loved it. And yeah, he almost, you know, anytime he talks about Belfast, you just want to sit there and cry because, yeah.
Oh, wait, I didn't talk about my, oh, wait, just reminded me, I don't know how I didn't mention this one. So I moderated Power of the Dog last week with Benedict Cumberbatch, Kirsten Dunst, Cody Smith-McPhee, and for the first time I met him in person, the perfect Jesse Plemons.
Oh my gosh.
He's so lovely.
He is God of the universe.
I want to be his best friend. I just
want to be his best friend. Like, I'm sure you guys share the same thing. Hollywood, it's not always a given that you're going to be a nice person or
quite
whatever
the opposite,
case may
I would
be.
Say.
And with him, he's also very unaware how freaking talented he is and just unassuming about like how much people love him and respect him. And I think that is just, like, I love that. He just eats humble pie all day. And yeah. Kirsten Dunst also just loves him to bits, and that,
yeah, they're adorable.
Yeah, love those two. I'm pretty sad if they ever break up, but
I can't have them break up, but they're gonna direct a movie together, as was revealed on our podcast, and they're gonna direct together one day, so we have to see it. Hopefully it's Game Night 2.
Though there were three things for me that really stood out this weekend. I already mentioned Swan Song. Tick Tick Boom premiered at AFI. Did an Academy screening, and wow, did they respond to it. I also, the SAG screening, not only like people were applauding after the musical numbers. You know, they were applauding when it started, when it ended. Like, I'll be completely honest with you. Going in, I did not know if I would like this movie because I just don't know how much I can care about a guy who at age 30 thinks he's washed up. And honestly, it was so fantastic. It was so well done. Clayton, I know that you were being reserved, saying that Lin-Manuel Miranda did a great job and that, you know, you felt like, you know, the directors can be a snobby branch. That was a fantastic directorial debut.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, having seen many poorly directed musicals, that's how you do it.
Yeah. I think I sat down there at the end and was like, this was his directorial debut. It was stunning. And like you said, I mean, we saw AFI, and I went in with very low expectations. When MJ Rodriguez appears, I think Eric Canderson, Nathaniel Rogers, and I applauded. And during Sunday, Lynn doesn't want us to spoil it. I think I'd never, the theater geek in me just exploded glitter in the hall at the Chinese theater, because it was such a beautiful homage. And yeah, Andrew Garfield too.
Fantastic.
Fantastic.
Best performance yet. And and I saw him in Angels in America. Like, he is so... Oh, funny thing that happened during the Q&A. I asked him what his first job was in the business. Mm-hmm. And Andrew Garfield said he did a Spanish Doritos commercial. And he made $2,000 and thought he had it made, and then didn't work for like another year. The woman who produced the Doritos commercial was in the audience that night.
Oh, that's crazy.
It is such a small world. And she came up to him and she's like, oh, I produced that Doritos commercial. He was like, oh my God, yes. And like, just, it's such a small freaking world.
Wow.
I wonder if that's online. Fine, go to
online.
YouTube. And is it?
Yeah. It is? Oh my God, I have to see it.
Oh God.
Sorry,
gave us a good segue into Tick, Tick, Boom. Just like kind of talking about.
Talk about Tick, Tick, Boom then, and then we'll come back to.
About its drop. I mean, yeah, it premiered at AFI and it did. It landed. Really believe it
Big
landed.
Way.
And musicals are not always a given. They come in with their back against the wall. People, this is like one of two genres that comes in with a predisposition of, I don't like musicals or I don't like horror movies. Like, it's just the two
of my
really,
favorites.
Yeah, exactly. They come in with that. But God, like, he does it. Can I just say, though, like, side note, it makes me get mad at Chris Columbus again for Rent.
I don't know that was completely his fault.
it's not, but I have to just get mad at someone. Rent
was very much of its time, and you know,
But either way, the movie's very well done. Andrew, I believe Andrew Garfield, true challenger to Will Smith.
He's freaking great.
If Will Smith manages to lose this season, because we've all felt pretty confident about that, especially after closing AFI and getting the good reception it did, it's Andrew Garfield. It's the Eddie Redmayne playbook.
Are they both dropping this weekend on Netflix and HBO Max? I think they are.
Yes, they're dropping on the same exact day.
Same thing.
Best Actor weekend, everyone.
See, I'm with you. I don't think Will Smith had a really strong challenger till Tick, Tick, Boom.
Yeah.
Like, I was keeping my eye on Benedict Cumberbatch, who I still think could pull something off.
Good,
but
yeah.
Yes.
Good, for sure. Yeah. But and also, just quick stand out because he's on the podcast this week, Mr. Robin De Jesus.
Oh, such a great performance. Who made his first film appearance in the movie Camp as a teenager. Remember? Oh, yeah.
He was in Boys in the Band last year.
Yeah.
He is incredible here. Could be our fifth Latino ever nominated in supporting actor, which is a gross stat.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a common stat.
Thank you for doing that. Seriously.
Also AFI in the Best Actress race. I just want to jump over to Halle Berry because Bruce has been, you know, sort of mentioned. She plays an MFA fighter. I actually thought she was fantastic, and I thought she proved to be a really good director. And let me just tell you, that SAG audience loves her. I mean, they're the people who gave her, like, I think the first big award for Monsters Ball and made me realize that she was probably going to win the Oscar. Everything she said, she's also just a great interview. You know, she talked about auditioning for Avatar. She talked about changing agents, you know, 4 years ago. She felt that she was sitting on a shelf wherever she was. She talked about how the role in Bruce was originally going to be played by Blake Lively.
Which, not Yeah. Good choice, by the way.
Well, it was very different. It was a very different script, yeah. I think. Yeah. And I mean, they just loved her. And you may have seen my photo. She stayed like an extra hour to take photos with everyone. And I would not underestimate her in this race.
That Halle Berry's going places.
Yeah.
That is such
20 years later with Denzel again and Will. It's like the 2001 ceremony all over again.
It's so true.
You just need Russell Crowe to throw a phone again.
Yeah, Bruce is great. I'm moderating the Q&A with her tonight, so I'm looking forward to it.
She's fantastic. I mean, she, yeah, just everything she said, like, people kept applauding, and I was like, okay, we're going to be here for another hour if you applauded everything.
Yeah.
But also, yes, I agree. Yeah. She was just, like, so frank and honest.
Yeah. I want to share, in regards to audience response, and, like, you know, festival overexcitement is a real thing, obviously. We know that. But I moderated King Richard at the DGA with Will and Ingenue Ellis. 500 people there. And I called Ingenue Ellis out. And there was a standing ovation. That crowd, like, threw. They came off the ground.
What have I been saying
and
all
then,
season?
And then didn't sit down for a good 4 minutes.
Yes. She is your front runner. I believe that.
Yeah. She is definitely a contender. Like, listen, supporting actress is the most competitive category, but I think they are a good package deal. And I think they're going to go far.
And I would not underestimate Sanaa Sidney, who plays Venus Williams.
Please don't.
I think she could get in.
Don't you lift my spirits like that. That's going to hurt my feelings because I want her in so bad. But yeah,
I think the only reason she isn't a given is because everyone knows Ingenue is getting nominated.
Yeah.
And they're like thinking, oh, they wouldn't pick two people from one movie. And I'm like, yeah, I think they could. King Richard, a big enough of a crowd pleaser as King Richard is. I could see John Bernthal getting into supporting actor, who is fantastic, by the way.
It was the first time, I saw that Telluride, and I've been saying it's top three, but it was when I looked in the room and I looked around and I said, oh, this really could win Best Picture. Like, this really could do it.
No one doesn't like that movie. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It might not be everyone's favorite, but everyone really likes it.
It's the Belfast play. It's the same Belfast play. It's liked.
Since I mentioned supporting actor, I just want to throw this out there as well. Bradley Cooper in Licorice Pizza. I don't care how small his role is. That is one of the best performances of the year, and it should be recognized.
He's so good in it.
So good.
He's so good. I wish he didn't pop up when he does, and then there's more time after him. Because it could have been the William Hurt play, pop up at the end of the movie, but you're an hour and 45 in, and you realize you haven't seen him yet, and then you see him, and then the scene is fantastic, but then there's like another 20 minutes. And that's what I think, like, sucks and hurts, but I think maybe he could. I'll love the Academy for it, but that's the gameplay.
Also, I think, you know, could be a spoiler in the Best Actress race, Alana Haim. She got a really good response. It was so funny at the Q&A I did with her and Paul Thomas Anderson. Paul kept saying these lovely things about her, and she like couldn't look up, and she was blushing, and I was like, you have got to get used to this.
I was there at the Q&A. You did a great job.
That's right. Thank you so much.
I threw lettuce, but you didn't see it. And then last thing to wrap up, obviously, probably the most important thing, Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz. Little story. Aaron Sorkin being the Ricardos.
Ooh, yeah.
Every studio, listen to me very carefully moving forward. Let everyone think that your movie is going to be a disaster. Let all of us think it. Like, don't correct us. Just say, yep.
I always had faith in Nicole. I always had faith in her.
Yeah.
And, like, I never understood people objecting to that casting. And I don't know why I would have ever doubted Aaron Sorkin, who has never made a movie I haven't liked. But what a pleasant, pleasant surprise. What a joy.
I know, right? I mean, the three of us sat together during that film, right?
And Mike was not there.
Sorry, Mike. Thanks for the invite. Again, thanks for the invite.
We were all wearing our sweatshirts.
I think the reason why is generally when Sorkin has done his take on television, Studio 60, which was god-awful. The Newsroom, which in hindsight was kind of addictive. I mean, we all hate watch The Newsroom.
Yeah.
But there's always something a little off when Sorkin. I mean, I enjoyed Sports Night, by the way, but that's decades ago. But more recently, there always seems to be something a little off when Sorkin does his take on television. There's something just a little like off kilter, and you end up hate watching it. And I think that's what we all assumed, and that's what I'm still assuming because I wasn't invited to any screening. is the case of this. So prove me wrong.
Because it wasn't. Honestly, I think one of the problems tends to feel like, I'm not saying definitely is, there always feels like there's a sense of try hard sometimes with some of his scripts. This did not feel try hard. This was in his pocket of like what he does well. I saw someone say like this is very un-Sorkin-y. Lie. This is the most Sorkin movie ever made.
It's the Sorkiniest.
It's the most Sorkiniest movie ever made, but it works. It plays to everything he does well. I think this is his best script written since Social Network.
I think it's his best film as a director. It's dynamically directed. Yes. It has a style. I was really, really impressed.
But to address the casting, by the way, because that seems to be always a big topic with Nicole Kidman. Nicole Kidman, the Deborah Messing, Nicole Kidman split that's on the internet right now. Yes, Deborah Messing may or does look like she could play Lucille Ball. Nicole Kidman doesn't necessarily look like Lucille Ball, but we're not looking for imitations here. We're looking for a performance. When she goes into the television show parts of the movie, I think she nails it. She gets Lucy. Yeah. She gets Lucy completely. And then when she's out of the TV show and she's just Lucille Ball, the woman, we don't know that person. So that worked completely for me. I think that worked to her benefit. Again, when she puts her hair up and is Lucy, then you're like, oh, there, I can see her. But when her hair is down, you're like, that you don't know how to feel about it. But she like navigates seamlessly through it. And J.K. Simmons, Jesus, JK. My love, the most perfect casting ever. Probably ever in the last like 20 years that he's playing Fred, William Frawley. And then Nina Arianda as Vivian Vance. Like, I want the world for her. I want an entire movie about her and that character.
The whole ensemble is fantastic. Yeah.
J.K. Simmons is a national treasure. That's it.
Yeah. Tony Hale, man. Like
Tony Hale and Olivia Shawkat together.
Show. What's his next show?
Veep 2? I don't know.
No. Mike, do you have a show coming up?
He's in the Mysterious Benedict Society. Disney Plus. Yeah.
What else does he have coming up? Because you're right. It's time for another Tony Hale series.
Yeah.
I want another one.
Did he win once or twice during Beep?
At least once.
I know once, but I didn't know if he won a second time. But yeah. But I think it's a heavy contender. It's hard to feel like to get a gauge on like is it like a possible Best Picture winner, and I would say yes because it's Hollywood. I go below the line to try to really find the road for it. I want it to win production design so bad. Like those sets are incredible and editing is great. Alan Baumgarten again, who did Charles Chicago 7, and Daniel Pemberton's score, give me all of it.
It's amazing. The hair and makeup is
fantastic. By the way, do you know what J.K. stands for?
No, actually, I've never thought about it. What is it?
Just kidding, Simmons.
Yeah. Jonathan Kimball.
Really?
And I know this because Professor Kimball was my teacher at University of Oregon, who I believe is his cousin, related to him somehow. Yeah.
So you're in the J.K. family.
Oh, J.K. and I go way back. I was the first person to ever put him on the cover of a magazine. Backstage, and this is how cute he was. He didn't know at the time where the Four Seasons Hotel was. I remember him having to call me for directions because it's confusing. It says south, but it's actually north. And like, I was like, this guy who had already at that point been around and done so much great work, I don't think he'd ever been to a junket before.
Was this pre-Juno?
This was definitely pre-Juno. It was around, he had just shot Thank You for Smoking. Because I remember Robert Duvall walked by and he's like, oh, I just did a movie with him, but I never met him. He was on a monitor. And then like watching like how he blew up after that. And like, I always tease him now. I'm like, you know where the Four Seasons is now, right? And can I just say, he sent me flowers to thank me. Who does that?
J.K. Simmons.
No one. Who does that?
J.K. Yeah. Simmons.
The nicest guy. So whenever he plays these...
Oh, I was just going to say, he just wants you to sign up for Farmers Insurance.
This was pre-Farmers also. Yeah, I think he was the M&M at that point. He was the yellow M&M, that much I remember. Yes, but he was not the Farmers guy. But you know what? Damn it, I'm going to switch my insurance just to support him.
Yep.
Bop, 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 bop.
So keep that house. But yeah, that next on the docket is Adam McKay's Don't Look Up screening this week.
Is there an embargo on that? Will you be allowed to talk?
Social embargo lifts right after. Review embargo is later.
Okay, because I have lots of fun thoughts.
Yeah. I'll be... Jazz, you're going tomorrow. No, you're going tomorrow. You and Wednesday, I are both going tomorrow. We're going just different times.
Yeah.
And we can't wait to be able to speak with Janelle about it. And then, Mike, do you want to come?
You got a plus one?
I do got a plus one. Mike, you want to come tomorrow night?
Oh, my God.
Oh.
It's a Baptist screening, so you get to put some tea and you put your pinky up.
I have to
prep. So I am actually on Thursday moderating a morning show panel to the finale. So I'll be hanging out with
Reese. Have you guys watched the finale,
Jennifer Aniston?
I have. So not yet. I love that show.
So is it better than last season or about on par? Lesser.
I really loved last season, so that's setting a really high bar. But yeah. I think this season has been really strong. Billy Crudup,
Billy's going to happen, right? Like that's going to happen in lead, probably.
That's got to happen.
Yeah,
I mean,
I think he has to go lead, don't you? I mean, it's a straddler. I think he does.
I think he does.
It's a. I mean, every category is competitive, so that's tough to say. I mean, he could go either. So I think it comes down to strategically. Where does it make sense?
Will Juliana have to go guest?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Has she been in more than half the episodes?
I haven't done the count.
Yeah.
Me either.
You have to be counting right now, every day.
He's like, it's film season. I'm on a break.
Oh, exactly. Just because we're on the subject of TV, and I talked about it on The Take last week, Cecily Strong on SNL.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Top five best moments SNL history. Over 40 years, and that I think that was top five best moments. And
I believe you mean Goober the Clown, not Cecily Strong.
Well, yes. Well, no. Well, she revealed later in an Instagram post that it was her. But I was moved by it, and now her Emmy can come.
Like I know it was genius. Like, it was genius, and that definitely that should put her on the Emmy map. Yeah. Absolutely. SNL's been good this season.
They've had some really
strong episodes and
major John the Major's episode, and not because of him, but I think they had such a good great week the week before. John the Major's was just lesser then, so I think it just paled in comparison. But I think this is a pretty good season. Right.
No, I think it's been strong.
Murder Dirter, any season that has that deserves love.
Yep.
Real quick, Paul Rudd, sexiest man alive.
Did you watch the TikTok? Of like him making business cards, like
yes. I saw that. I also saw him on Colbert when they introduced it. And listen, I love Paul Rudd.
Yeah,
but
I mean, that day that they named it, Jessica then threw on Clueless, and I said, oh look, it's Paul Rudd. He looks exactly the same.
He does.
He just hasn't aged a day. He's always looked 30.
Yeah.
Even when he was younger, he looked 30 and then he just stayed there.
Right, right. When he was 20, he was 30. And now when he's 50, he's 30.
Did you all know that Tony Goldwyn is 61?
I said it in the Q&A. I said, guys, why are we not discussing this? 61.
It's so weird to me. The guy, speaking of always looking 30.
And it didn't compute in my head. I was thinking to myself, I was like, what is he? And then I was like, oh, yeah, Ghost. He's like 30.
Ghost was,
he's like 30.
Yeah,
Ghost, yeah.
What was Mike's question?
What do we think of Paul Rudd as a sexiest man alive?
Listen, people, I like some unconventional choices. Like,
I don't know if that, I think it's entirely conventional. I think that's part of my problem. But again, I cannot say because I have the weirdest crushes. I was actually doing a career thing with Oscar Isaac yesterday, and somehow it came up that I had crushes on both Tim Curry and Raul Julia's kids as a kid, not when they were kids. And I was like, and he's like, oh, your crushes were my crushes.
That is a very specific type, but it I can is. See it.
It's a guy who looks good with a pencil-thin mustache. If you can rock that pencil-thin mustache, I'm in.
I'm actually going through the list because I was like, who have they chosen over the years?
Reggae Jean Paul.
Do you know who it started with? The new...
Yes, I do. Mel Gibson?
The new director of Lethal Weapon 5.
I have that
5.
Issue somewhere. Yeah, first ever Sexiest Man Alive. I remember when it was Nick Nolte.
And then the next year was Mark Harmon.
Mark Harmon, I remember that. Harry Hamlin,
then JFK Jr., Sean Connery.
I got this issue every year when I was growing up. So I remember these, yep. I was like, Nick Nolte. Who society.
Oh, wow.
I just said Nick Nolte. I was like, this is who society is dictating.
And then they did the combo of Richard Gere and Cindy Crawford.
The sexiest couple alive.
That timed well.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so it's always been a little questionable. So fine, give it to him. Real quick before we go, things to watch. I enjoyed Cowboy Bebop, the live action.
I've been watching. Is it fun or is it like just like?
It's fun.
It's fun.
It's fun. Yeah, yeah. So you know, and I know a lot of folks who love the anime are not happy with a live action version. I think you're never gonna please everyone. But if you sort of just take it on its own merits, pull back from worrying about whether you know it's a tribute to the anime or not, just enjoy it. It's fun. Great casting, John Cho, fantastic. So recommend that over the weekend. That's my pick for this weekend.
Michael, what's on your hat?
Northwestern.
Medill.
Oh, did you go to Northwestern?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Hasn't like half the newsroom came from Northwestern?
Half the newsroom.
Yeah.
Yeah. Though there's been periods of time where like we even like the same dorm. There was like three of us at Variety at one point.
Really?
Yeah. So.
Is there anyone that went together at the same time?
Yes, actually, this is boring, everyone, so we should just end it, and then I'll just tell you offline, but,
yes.
So, on that note,
yep. Kristen Stewart, she's
Spencer.
Our guest.
Sir.
She talks about it all. Talks about Mike and all his shenanigans.
Luke and Laura Spencer.
Yeah, Kristen Stewart did go to, elementary school with Elizabeth Wagmeister.
Oh,
and then,
that's adorable.
And then she left to go do Panic Room, and then never came back.
I assume you mean Kristen, not Elizabeth.
Yeah. Yes.
And years later, Elizabeth would do The Take with some dude.
Some dude.
It all comes full circle.
So some dude.
Yep.
So, all right, guys. Peace out.
Love y'all.
Bye.
Bye.
After the break, Robin De Jesus, one of the stars of the new Netflix feature, Tick, Tick, Boom. From Los Angeles, this is Variety's Award Circuit Podcast. And we're back. It's the Award Circuit Podcast, and I'm Clayton Davis. Lin-Manuel Miranda's directorial debut, Tick, Tick, Boom, stars Andrew Garfield as Rent playwright Jonathan Larson. Garfield's Jonathan Larson is sensitively constructed and harmoniously executed through his sweet arrangements and vocal inflections.
I have an original rock musical.
Hey, boy genius.
That I have spent the last 8 years of my life writing.
He's getting out. You're going to be rich and famous.
And rewriting.
Did you crack it yet?
Oh, I'm getting so close. And rewriting.
Can I hear it?
Any day now.
8 years! And the time keeps ticking. Tick, tick.
You need to ask, are you letting yourself be led by fear? Or by love.
Fear! 100% fear!
Providing a palpable balance and an emotional anchor to the story is Tony nominee Robin De Jesus as Jonathan Larson's best friend and roommate, Michael. The Latino breakout star could ride a gilding wave into the supporting actor category if the film's magic is received warmly, as it's been so far since it debuted at the AFI Film Festival. De Jesus' Broadway credits include In the Heights, Wicked, and of course, Rent. I recently spoke with Robin De Jesus about Tick, Tick, Boom and what the project meant to him. We began by discussing what it was like to be part of a project that honored Jonathan Larson.
Well, for starters, it was an honor. I was 14 years old when I discovered Jonathan Larson, and partially the reason I remember that moment was because someone showed me the album cover to Rent, and I saw all the squares, and I saw all the little black and brown faces that were in a Broadway show, and I didn't really know that anyone had put us in a show as black and brown faces. And that did something. I was like, oh, there is some space. It might be a little limited, but it exists, you know?
It can widen over time.
Yeah, we're still working on that.
Wait, everything's not fine. Wait, everything's fine, right? Like, nothing. Okay. Nothing's going wrong, right? No. John, I mean, listen, not a lot of people are familiar with Tick, Tick, Boom. And I was familiar with the show because also I'm from New York and, you know, it's born in us, but a lot of people will be surprised that this is not him making Rent. This is him being an artist in New York City. And you play Michael, his best friend. Now this is about his life, but sort of with inflections of, does Michael really exist? Is there a Michael that you knew of or know of?
Is there a Michael that I knew? I think there are a few people in my life. Michael in the sense of like the person that tethers someone.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay. You know, the collective, the family, my best friends. Mm-hmm. People always laugh. Like whenever I'm feeling myself, I have a group of folks that'll be like, they celebrate me feeling myself. Mm-hmm. But then they'll have those moments of be like, okay, come back down. Aquí tierra firma.
What was your preparation for portraying Michael in Tick, Tick, Boom?
Yeah.
It's hard to like talk about like the research for the movie because obviously the artist is no longer with us. So how did you prep for this?
The big thing for me was, believe it or not, getting off book. But that's because something as simple as getting off book was the first thing I wanted to do because Steven wrote such a good screenplay. And the thing about Steven and how he wrote Michael was that there was meat on the bone. There was like, I could see all the beats that I was supposed to hit and that there was space for more beats, which is also dope because no one else had given me that opportunity before.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, I came in hungry. I came ready to eat. And then, you know, in learning the lines, I'm doing all my character development and stuff like that. But the big thing I needed to do for this was acknowledge spirit and create a space where I could invite it in. And for me, I wanted to be really intentional about the specific spirits that I wanted to be present. It was, of course, Jonathan's spirit, but it was also the spirit of my gay Latino ancestors who were erased from our history and who were replaced by white supremacy. And now I'm sitting here 37 years old trying to think of another gay Puerto Rican man that I could look up to that's an elder, and it doesn't exist, even in narrative form.
I'm so glad you said that because I write often about diversity and representation, but also I talk about the talent pool and the pipeline of the next generation. And what I mean by that is when we lose someone like Raul Julia that like rippled through Latino actors because we've spent years looking forward, like who could be the next Raul Julia? And in white culture and white actors, when they lose a legend, there's like 50, 60, 300 guys, and mostly guys, to jump into that space. So how do you feel about Latinos getting this opportunity to be more present? Because it's still there's still so much work to do.
I have lots of thoughts. Well, the first thing I want to acknowledge is I want to give Raul love, because he's so important to us and to our culture. But one of the things that I respect so much about him was that, you know, Raul came from an upper middle class background. And in that, it's so there's great privilege. You know, there was a sensibility to the art form that he had that was less working class than other folks, right? But he never forgot us. He was always about the people. And so the beauty that he could check his own privilege and that he could participate in the collective in a way that wasn't elitist. That's what always makes me proudest about him. I think second half of what you said was about what we need to do in order to create space for the rest of us, yeah, right?
To make sure that the future is still full of Latinos.
Yeah, I think we got to be vocal. I think we got to be willing to lose work. I think we have to be willing as Latina artists to like show up to places and say, I can't put up with certain things. And I think there's a navigation in that. I think people are in different places in their career. So like for me right now, I sometimes feel like in the film world, I don't get to have as much of an effect as I would necessarily like in theater. I feel like I can be more vocal there. But at the same time, there's something downloading right now. So mm-hmm. I apologize. I'm just letting myself receive it for a second. Sorry, I know slow, but I feel it coming.
Let it come.
There's this thing happening right now. We're talking about diversity. And the reason I take that beat, because I want to make sure I'm not being harmful with this conversation, is because white supremacy is presenting itself in so many ways. And it's lurking and creeping in a way that wants to divide the rest of us people of color. It wants to make us think that there's this one lane for all of us and that we all, Asian folks, non-Latino black folks, Latino black folks, within Latino folks, that we all got to fight for that one cookie. Mm-hmm. And the thing that I keep telling folks is, like, when it comes to our history and the fact that our land is fertilized with the bodies of natives, which include Mexican folks, which include Taino folks, and then it was built by black folks, I feel like there's a certain attention that needs to be paid there because of the history and the contributions of that they've made to this country. So people are talking about diversity, and they think that that only means black folks. And then they're putting the rest of us up in this place of scarcity. And what I'm saying is black folks deserve that lane. They deserve that space. They've given enough. We need multiple lanes. Stop making us think that it's black folks stealing stuff from us, because that's not the case. But you want us to believe that so that we can have infighting and not work as a collective.
So thank you. You gave me a great segue to one of the points that I've... representation, when I talk about it, I'm going to speak for myself, we're not all talking about the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
We're not talking about the same thing. Oscar Isaac, recently a guest here, shared, love him too, and too good looking for his own good, just going to put that out there. Just like out there, I hate that he made me want to leave my wife. Like I saw it in real time. True story. I was talking to my wife, and after our interview, I went up to her and I said, "You are never allowed to meet Oscar Isaac in person." And she said, "Why?" I was like, "Because you're going to leave me for him." And she said, "That's not fair." I was like, "Listen, I can't meet him in person either. I will leave you." And that's a really rough conversation to have right now. And she was like, "Fair." And then we just went about our separate ways. So Oscar Isaac, in our interview, talked about really brought my point to life. First time he ever saw, the first thing that Raul Julia ever did here in America was Betrayal on Broadway by Harold Pinter.
Mm.
He was a Latino doing a British accent.
Mm.
It wasn't a Puerto Rican role, even though he's Boricua from Puerto Rico, but he got to play a role because. And when we're talking about representation, yes, I love being Latino and black and writing about Latino black issues, but it's about saying that we can write, express, depict all types of roles and items. I say that to you because when the study came out about Latinos not being represented in film, less than 5% in the last 13 years, and used the term Latinx. And on Twitter, there was 1,000 comments talking about stop using the word Latinx. And they all argued about it. And I was like, guys, I just told you that that we're not anywhere, but you're going to fight about this.
Yep.
why is that? And what can we do about that?
I think we forget the importance of words. I think we forget etymology. How do you, words are spells, and we're casting them all the time, right? And so I want there to be like a change in the culture that includes the language. Because if I look at an iPad and I zoom in on it, I see all these things that I didn't see before, right? So when it comes to the race conversation and ethnicity and how we define ourselves, how we identify, of course it's going to change. Because we're downloading so much information, and now it's happening at a faster rate, and now we have more people who are on board and who want to be of service and contribute to that conversation. And so I wish that instead of being triggered by like a new word that represents us, that we could be like, whoa, how beautiful, we're getting better, we're healing, we're growing. We have this new word, not because we have this burdensome responsibility of having to use it, but because we're bettering ourselves and being more inclusive and bringing in people. There's also the fact that when it comes to Latinx and Latine, it's about gender and it's about patriarchy and it's about us being triggered by other people's authenticity, us not accepting people as they are. I had a therapist used to say to me that when you're a really authentic and honest person, you're perceived as weird. Mm. That shit is true.
That is true. That's why I consider myself the weirdest guy alive. So I can feel that. And it's about identification. Like, I don't say I'm Latinx when I talk to someone about it. But if someone else does, that's fine too. Just like we are in this changing world where gender identity is fluid. Like, so is our culture and how we identify.
But also, let's not act like this is new. Let's not act like indigenous cultures have been acknowledged multiple genders for centuries. This is not brand new information.
Yeah. It's new to people that feel like or that have social media. But yes. It is something that people are finding out. And again, it's just we're counting the pennies and watching the dollars fly by. Like, it's just that it's what's happening here. And also, as a Latino, I think you're going to probably recognize this as well. Latinos need to write our own house. Like, we have our own problem with colorism and racism that it's a tough conversation. It's going to be really uncomfortable to have, but we need to have it soon.
It's so behind when you listen to La Mega, when you listen to the radio.
I love that you said La Mega, by the way. I swear to God, yesterday at a party, I said, and no one knew what I was talking about.
Oh, isn't it suck when you can't share that?
Oh, my God. I love you, Robin.
I love you. No, because it's true. It's like that thing is like, it's like a cultural defining thing. And you're like, yes, I know what that is.
I said it and no one laughed. And I was like, oh, it's because you guys are monsters. La Mega.
I forgot what I was going into.
Colorism.
Colorism, word. Thank you. Yes. It's like, okay, so my grandparents on each side, I have a black grandparent, I have a white grandparent, right? And it was so interesting clocking that on my maternal side, my black grandmother, and I want you to know that I'm not saying this to speak ill of you at all, but simply to like help us heal collectively. She was someone who knew that in her life, identifying and being black equaled violence, being from a colony. And so she, in her trauma, had to run from that blackness. My grandmother used to say terrible things. I call it like Seeley syndrome, because she would say, I know I'm black and I'm ugly. But I refuse to marry someone darker than me because I won't raise coal for children. And so now for me in my life, there's a trauma that I received from her. And even in all my light skinness, because when I present, you wouldn't know. Soy hawaito, I'm hawao, you know? But she taught that to the rest of the family, that self-hatred and that anti-blackness. Because for her, and it's not an excuse, but it is an explanation for the fact that for her, she's like, that's how I run away from violence, and I don't want you to experience that. So I'm going to lighten us para mejorar la raza, to better the race. That was the thought. It wasn't the truth. It wasn't, and times changed. And so it's like now we're all just trying to undo those teachings that we learned from our elders, many of whom, let me word this correctly, many of whom were colonized in a way that the white physical presence of white supremacy didn't have to be in the room for their work to be in effect. Because to me, the thing about white supremacy that's most dangerous is when it presents in thought. Because at least when it's physical, you know what it is.
Yeah, because you can see it.
You can see it. But when it's sneaking around back here, like, that's where things get dangerous. And so until we begin to undo that and really, really question ourselves and question the people that we love and maybe recognize that they were faulty.
Yeah.
Then we can work past it.
And you can still love them. And you still, like, recognize that we all know that we're not perfect. And we also need to just allow open space for that dialogue.
Yeah.
And also leave space for people to learn. Because, like, people don't know. Like, especially when we talk about Afro-Latinos, like, it's like you're Black or Latino. They don't see, like, the overlap. Like, like guys, like, it's both. Black Lives Matter is us too, and no one like.
Well, Black liberation is everyone's liberation.
Yeah, like, come on. All right. But you are, you got it.
No.
Tick, tick, boom. Lin-Manuel Miranda. This
Who's
guy.
He?
This guy. Oh, some dude that's making movies all the time. his directorial debut, 5 projects this year, unheard of in Latino culture.
Why do they give me the giggles?
I know, like, it's just because it's and as listen, it's great, and I love him, and I'm so glad for his success. When there was the surrounding backlash around in the Heights regarding Afro-Latinos being present, which I believe Lin spoke to brilliantly after, and saying, like, you know, I hear you, I will do better in my next project.
Yep.
It spoke to, again, why are we laying the entire existence of Latinos on the shoulders of one man?
Ooh, can I just share one thing, though, personally?
Please.
When that was going down, ooh, that was rough.
Yeah.
And the internal fighting and, like, the way white supremacy was crossing his arms and smiling.
Mm-hmm.
And the way also that they made us the deliverers of their message. The fact that then they had us acting real light-skinned. And then not listening to our Black Latinos. And I was proud of Lin. And this gets complicated, y'all. I don't mean to trigger anyone. I'm just trying to work through it. I was proud of him because I felt like he took it. And he did listen. And it proved that not everyone gets canceled.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's out here all scared. White folks are scared. They're so scared of making a mistake.
Of something that doesn't exist, by the way. But yeah.
And I'm like, well, then come correct when you get called out. You're not. I don't think of you as being racist until I see your reaction when you get called out on racist behavior.
Mm-hmm.
When you double down or you want to hide, now I'm like, now you're a racist because you're trying to gaslight me. Lin didn't gaslight us afterwards. And so I just wanted to, like, I told him, I said, I'm proud of you for handling it the way you did and accepting that responsibility. And I said, I know this may sound annoying, but I want to tell you that none of this would have been possible if it wasn't for the fact that the movie was so important to us.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for the fact that we want what's best for us and we're having this moment. So for Black Latinos, it's like, of course they took this moment to be more vocal because they've been talking about it for a minute. No one's been listening, but now there is an audience.
Yeah.
So the criticism is also a sign of the success.
Yeah.
And I think it's just we got triggered and we're hurt.
Well, it was also the first Latino movie in 26 years since Selena in 1995. Like, we don't see this often ever, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, there was a lot of...
But everybody's hurt.
Yeah. I think that's a great point. We are. I think everyone is. Where can we heal? Where does the healing come from? Mm. Where do you see it?
I mean, I see the healing in the questioning of oneself. I see the healing in truly connecting with folks that have different lived experiences than us. Because you know, in our families, you meet siblings who have completely different experiences. You have, like, I come from a multiracial family, so we got mad hues. And I know that I've seen households where a dark-skinned sister has a different experience than a light-skinned brother, even though they have the same parents. Mm-hmm. So there's, like, it's a fact, y'all, that the pigmentocracy is in existence. So we got to question ourselves, and we have to accept the fact that we could actually be wrong. Who, like when we're having, we have to go into these conversations accepting that we might be incorrect and that we might learn something. So some humility.
We may not have all the information. Like, it's listen, learn.
Yep.
I'm all for it. So because I'm the Film Awards editor here at Variety, I do have to ask you this, and you can give the great generic answer, but I just need to put it out there for you. Tick, Tick, Boom. You are incredible in it. One of the best performances I've seen this year. Also from Andrew Garfield. Let's talk about him.
Yeah, that Motherflower is beautiful. Oh, God.
I met his father, and it was the most... I've never been afraid to meet anyone in my life. And I was afraid to meet him because I don't meet the parents of the people I talk about. So I was like, oh, God, did I say anything? I was like running through stuff.
That's so Latino. That's so Boricua.
I was like, oh, no, I'm in trouble. I was like, hello, sir. Like, I called him sir. I put my head down. Like, I was retracted. It was, I learned something about myself that day. But I believe that you are in the conversation for an Oscar nomination. You would be the fifth Latino ever nominated for a Best Supporting Actor award. Interestingly, it's been 10 years since we had a Latino nominated in Best Actor, and we actually might get one this year with Clifton Collins Jr. and Jockey. So I have this dream that's going to be the both of you there together and all the Latino-ness, just like taking it all in. What does a moment like that sound like? And this, and listen, you've been nominated for 3 Tonys. Can't wait for you to win that too. But what would that feel like to have that distinction on your IMDb page?
As I exhale, well, first of all, can we just take a moment? Can we just take a moment to go that you read that, like that it's in existence, that it's out in the air for the collective.
Yeah.
Like, that we get to have that conversation, a conversation that we deserve to be having prior to my existence.
I also just want to point out there's an accent on your U in Jesus. I just been trying to like Jesus. Really educate people on like the Jesus is good, but
the Jesus,
is stronger.
Yes, it is. Yep. I think my ancestors would appreciate that. Please, thank you.
Yeah, go ahead.
What it would mean for me? I mean, it's a dream come true. It's something that I would be lying to you if I didn't say that it's something that I've wanted for a long time. Mm-hmm. But I will also tell the universe this: I have conditions on that if it wants to send it my way. The first time I got nominated for Heights, I did spiral a bit. Like, there was something about, like, my dreams coming true at the age of 23 that I don't know that my psyche could have handled. I do know and affirm that I am in a significantly better place right now. I do feel tethered. I feel rooted. I feel centered on my ancestors and what my intentions are. But what we do in this business is not human. It's not normal. And so, like, to be on a platform, it's just, like, it's a lot of energy and it's a privilege. I welcome that and affirm that coming to becoming my reality, but I want it to come with mental health. I want it to come with an opportunity for me to give back and to be of service and to be used. Ooh. Mm. Hmm. Hmm. Because it's so much bigger than us. It's so much bigger than this conversation. And we deserve better. Yeah.
I'm just really glad that I get to have, you know, coming with this information. There's not very, you know, Latinos representation in entertainment is one thing. Representation in journalism is another. Mm. I can't recall too many.
It can't just be Maria Hinojosa. It can't just be Maria Hinojosa. That can't be it. I love her.
Yeah, but like, yes, I love that. And two Boricuas from the East Coast, being able to sit here and have a frank conversation makes me just feel great. Same. But I'm done with the serious stuff. I want to have some quick fun questions for you. Do you mind that I just record? I'm just going to put it for you. Because I have vowed to do this for all time because I don't get to interview many Latinos, and I will interview so many for the rest of my life. I'm putting it out there.
Yep, I affirm that.
Okay, Robin de Jesus, do you keep pots and pans in your oven?
Localero tan ahí metido. Yes, of course I do. Pots and pans. Mm. Yep.
The one Spanish meal you would have before you died. What would be on that plate?
Gandinga.
Really?
I'm a jibaro inside. Like I'm like Avatar. We don't throw away any part of the animal. We respect that thing. It died. And like I know that some people are triggered by that because they're like, it's all about this. Gandinga is like a scarcity meal. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But Gandinga to me is, first of all, it tastes delicious. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. Gandinga to me, it tastes amazing. But it's also about our ingenuity and our history. Gandinga is about, it's the pride that we got scraps, but mm-hmm. we did something with that. We made something out of nothing. We made something out of something that was being rejected. So it's like, it's a celebration of how amazing we are.
Yeah. If you could have a conversation with one Latino actor or actress, living or dead, who would you want to just have a good 30-minute combo with?
You know, Raul. Mm. It is Raul because there's something about him that vibrates for me. There's something about him, like, I remember hearing someone say, I was taking a class in Shakespearean text, and they talked about how when he rehearsed, you know, he would take whatever, if it was like two households, boy, yeah. I'm gonna make it so, because I can't think. Yeah. He'd be like, two fucking households, la dos igual in dignity. Like he would do, when it came time to the actual performance, he would do it as written, mm-hmm. but he would do this thing where he would say the words the way he would say them, going in and out of the text, just so that he could know what it felt like to use the text, but also the feeling of how he would say the same thing with his own words. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, sure does.
Yeah. I'm just like, I'm fascinated by so many things about him. Yeah.
If you're driving down the street in New York City, what song would be blasting out of the car?
Mi mayor venganza será. Será. I gotta go to low note because that's too high right now. That is the, so my sister and I, there's two songs that we listen to on every road trip. Mm-hmm. And one is La India, and the other one is Who Can I Run To? That's the other one. And we always like fight over who's gonna go for the high note midway. But that's it.
Last question for you. Thanksgiving is very close by. What meat is on that plate for you at Thanksgiving?
I mean, I'm not gonna lie to you. I think the diaspora might be disappointed. The pernil.
Mm-hmm.
People aren't eating as much pork in the family no more. So we don't make pernil as much as we used to.
This is what a stroke feels like.
No, it really does. Like right now, we are the anomaly in that sense for the Puerto Rican family. We put aside the pernil. We do still eat pork, don't get me wrong. And my mom does have chicharrón day. Like that.
Okay,
like,
okay.
Chicharrón day is always there. But for whatever reason, it was like, there's already so much eating happening. And so like, to add the pork, to add the pernil specifically, maybe that's a bit much. I think my family would find it interesting to understand that ribs are pork, though. Because we always have ribs as a substitute, even though nobody wants to eat pork.
That's fair.
They fool themselves.
That's fair. Empanadas or alcapurrias?
Alcapurria.
Ooh.
Alcapurrias in our family, yeah. Empanada de pizza.
Coquito or cerveza?
Coquito. Coquito's where it's at.
Malibu rum or alizé?
How dare you, Malibu rum.
Thank you. My favorite drink is the Malibu Bay Breeze, and I will own that till I die. Until I die, I order it. I go to every party. In L.A., they don't have... Malibu's not a given here.
Really?
Yeah, I've gone to every party, and it becomes a little embarrassing. I'm like, do you have Malibu? They're like, no. They got Bacardi. I'm like, oh, God, okay.
Yo, in those moments, I want you to go, that's discriminatory.
Yeah, it's discrimination. last question for you. When's the last time you've been to Puerto Rico, and what would you want people to know about Puerto Ricans that they don't... that they may not know already?
Yeah. I went to Puerto Rico 2 months before the shutdown. I went back, and that was the longest break I'd had in not going. I hadn't been in 6 years. I grew up going every single year.
Yeah.
But it's like my mom came back to the mainland. My grandma had passed. Some relatives moved to Tennessee. Who knew there was Puerto Rican Tennessee and Florida? So we just weren't going back. And I missed it. I needed it. It was that was amazing. I think the thing that I want people to know is that Puerto Rico is not full of lazy-ass people. Puerto Rico is not full of folks who don't uplift themselves. It's not full of people who are lazy and don't even grow their own food. There's a food sovereignty movement happening. There are children from the diaspora returning to the motherland. And so we have such a desire to be self-sustainable, and we have the means. But the corruption of being a colony keeps getting in the way of our success. So don't buy the bull that we can't, that we're not doing the work ourselves. Some of you mother flowers aren't allowing us.
Mm. What are you working on next? That's how we're going to end it. What's coming next? When do I get another Robin de Jesus?
Well, I was supposed to do a play.
Okay.
And it's not happening now.
Who do I need to text? Who do I need to talk to?
No, but it's...
Are you good?
I was supposed to do a play.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not anymore. We were supposed to do two plays. One of which is not happening for reasons you can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
The other one, the timing's not working out right now.
Okay.
So I'm free right now for next year.
You're available is what you're saying.
I'm very available, but there's something that I really want.
Mm.
My best friend Dominic Colon, Bronx, Puerto Rican, playwright, writer, we're working on some stuff.
Okay.
But there's a play that we want to do called The War I Know. And it's a play about the AIDS epidemic and centering the black and brown community of the Bronx that was erased from that narrative. You know, because that was also colonized. And so it's a trilogy, and it's really beautiful. It's really funny, and like it's probably the thing that I want to do most. I'm also on this really beautiful show that Nikki Lopez wrote called Sebastian of the Seas. It's a cartoon on Nickelodeon about a Puerto Rican kid and his coqui, and their pirates in the Caribbean and all their adventures. And I play one of the like fun villains, and it's really cool.
I am so excited. Listen, when Hollywood is ready to make the Chupacabra horror film, I'm like waiting for you to do it. But thank you for taking this time with me. Congratulations, and thanks for being you.
Yo, no, word. Thank you. And like the respect is mutual and love.
That's Robin de Jesus, one of the stars of Tick, Tick, Boom, in select theaters now, and now streaming on Netflix. And that's it for this edition of the Variety Award Circuit podcast. Drew Griffith edited this episode, and Michael Schneider is the producer. Be sure to subscribe to the Award Circuit podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you download podcasts. Also, head to Variety.com and click on the Award Circuit tab to find the latest Oscar predictions and key races, as well as your daily fix of news, analysis, and reviews. For Janelle Riley, Jazz Tanke, and Michael Schneider, I'm Clayton Davis. We'll see you on the circuit.